You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 164. Today on the podcast, it's Thursday, December 26th. Hope everybody who celebrates had a Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to all. Steve, it is good to be back talking always this time of year because it feels like the final bridge from 2024 to 2025 and a fresh season, a fresh slate. And we've got a lot of good stuff to talk about today, looking deep at starting pitchers beyond ADP 200. And we've kind of capped it around ADP 300. So it's kind of that honeypot of SP5 to SP9 on your rosters where you're kind of loaded up. We all know that that's a key section to attack every single year. And we'll get into this year, how the landscape's looking. Coming off of a great show a couple weeks ago with Chris Towers, but I haven't talked to you in a little bit. How's Christmas break going? I think you got a couple drafts under your belt. Excited to talk baseball with you, man.
Yeah, I have one completed. Did a gladiator draft over at NFBC. I'm in the middle of an NFBC 50. So basically by the end of next week, I'll have my first two teams. That'll probably be it for me for 2024. But then, like you're hinting at, I know we've been saying how, you know, the fantasy season now is a full season, a year-long event for fantasy baseball. That is, at least that's how it's gotten over the last few years. It's been more and more commonplace to just basically start drafting and start breaking down players the second even the playoffs start. Honestly, even before, right? We had that meatball draft that Rick Deadpool Hitter put on in the summer, right? Like right in August. Mm-hmm. So we have like ADP data. So it's no longer like, all right, once the new year starts, we really start to kick in the high gear, which is true. Like we do, but it's already started. It'll get even more so. Like once the holiday ends, I know that's when you like to start to bear down and dip your toe into some drafts.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure we'll do that even more. So, yeah, and then before we know it, it'll be, you know, February, March, and proper draft season. So
it is.
I think it's good to get ahead of it. Yeah,
it is. It's draft prep season, and we welcome all you guys here. It's obviously the most exciting time of the year for fantasy baseball, ramping up for the draft. And for anybody who's new, we'll be doing this every other Thursday. I think up usually until mid late February, and then we switch to weekly. But you guys can follow us at Wins Above Pod on Twitter, at Wins Above Fantasy on Blue Sky. I am at @Van_Verified. Steve is at @Stav8818. And yeah, it's great having you guys with us off season. It always helps to give us a rating, review. Those go a long way for us. But Steve, I do feel like you've kind of crossed the threshold a little bit. Like you and I almost can't even speak as peers tonight because you are on the other side of the line on having done a draft. So talk to me about the Gladiator draft briefly. I know we've got plenty of pitchers to talk about throughout the show, but we've never done a Gladiator draft. We've talked about it. So I need you to give me the summary of what was different, what stood out, what you enjoyed, and of course, some of the players that you went for.
Yeah, it's been, I want to get better at NFBC at NFBC leagues, particularly draft and holds, and you know, start having some more respectable finishes after the last few years of
mediocrity.
Basically just every team finishing in the middle of the pack or towards the bottom. You know, I've been at this for probably 3 or 4 years now. I did do some like cut lines when I didn't really know what I was doing from like 2016 to 2017. So I do have from teams from back then, but before I really, really got into this, I do have one win in my history, which is good, but it was and not to knock on any of these leagues, but it was an on-the-wire listener league, so it wasn't like a true you know, league that you just sign up for in the lobby.
The public industry league.
Yeah, exactly. So I want to get better, and the only way to do that is to do more drafts, so I've started it a little bit earlier. I know we've, in the past, like to give ourselves a little bit of break, and it can be detrimental if you don't really have the time or the resources to go after it, but I figured, hey, what the hell? Why not get your feet wet and at least try? So that's what I'm doing. And the Gladiator, we've talked about these a bunch. They run them. I think they're still running them at NFBC. I know they do cut them off. I don't know exactly when. I know, like, we went to sign up for a Gladiator last year, and it was, like, well beyond when they were offering them. It was the first year they did them last year, so maybe it'll be a little bit longer this year that they'll offer them. But what makes them unique is that it's just a 23-round draft, and the team that you draft is your team. There are no bench spots at all. It is
same kind of format as draft and hold, except 25
roster spots. Or 27, basically. Yeah, right? There's 50 in draft and hold. There's 27 left spots because there is no bench. Like, so it's literally a war of attrition. You don't have any injury replacements at all. And it was very hard.
Did it shake up the ADP? Like, is Jose Berríos going, like, seventh round or something?
Just, I mean,
like,
it's not
overreacted.
I don't think so. Like, I don't think there was a bump up on, you know, maybe there was a slight bump up on stable players. Like, I did that myself. Like, I took a Logan Webb in the sixth round, something that I normally wouldn't do. I still was a little bit late on pitching. I think I was the last team to draft a pitcher, as I normally am. And my first pitcher was Garrett Cole. I was going for Yamamoto, but he got sniped the pick before me. He was not, I guess, heading into the last year, you know, there wasn't much of a health concern, but he did miss some time last year. So that's a little scary in a team where there's no bench slots. But it wasn't as much as the stability players bumped up that gave me trouble, or at least made me, you know, second guess myself. It was that when you don't have bench spots, yeah, you don't have injury replacements or stuff, but you don't have the slots to, okay, hey, I'm short on steals. Let me make sure that I grab a speedy outfielder in my next bench outfielder slot. Yep. Like, you don't have the makeup picks.
A special assignment. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, with that in mind, I did try to focus on players that are well-rounded and contribute in every category. My first three picks were Kyle Tucker, Jazz Chisholm, and Matt Olson. So, you know, I know Matt Olson doesn't run much, but he should contribute in all four hitting categories. Mm-hmm. I know he does have some fluctuation with batting average, but shouldn't be like a drain. Jazz, it has power and speed. Kyle Tucker, obviously, one of the most impressive power speed combos there is. I did do this draft before the trade to Chicago, which is, I don't know if that would have, you know, made me go Soto or Henderson or Tatis, the guys that went right after him, but maybe it would have, just because Chicago, as we saw from like the Cody Bellinger trade, isn't the greatest place for left-handed power. But that could kind of vary from year to year, depending on the weather conditions and the wind, if there's more games where the wind's blowing out at Wrigley. So,
for what it's worth, his little quick look tool on Savant goes from 22 homers to 19. Of course, those were if all the games were played there. But, yeah, so slight bump down.
Yeah, I don't know if it's it's more of like a slight second guess. I honestly think I may have taken him still in that spot, even if he was with the Cubs, had I known that. And this was the sixth pick that I had there. So it was good. I did bump up some closers. I took Andre Munoz in the fifth round, what I normally may not have done. That was another thing that was very much so a high tax on closers. Like, Munoz was, I don't know, the eighth or ninth closer taken. Like, before him, it was Helsley, Iglesias, Batista, and then obviously, you know, Hader, Mason Miller, Edwin Diaz, Devin Williams, Emmanuel Clase. So I think he was like eight or nine there. So it was tough. It was a good experience, fun. I'm excited to see how it plays out, and like, because that's it. Like, I'm literally not touching this team for the rest of the year.
Which is why you got to bump
the bench, yeah.
Yeah, which is why reliever, you can't play the freeze or anything or the carousel. So yeah, what you do, did you say what you did at catcher?
Curious. I was a little bit late on that too. Yeah. My catchers are Tyler Stevenson, who I like very much in the 10th round. You know, he had a great year. If you take a step back, kind of went under the radar. I think he had 19 homers. And, you know, has always hit the ball hard and been a good barrel from behind the plate there in that great ballpark. And then Jonah Heim.
It's not terrible.
Yeah. Not horrible. I wish I would have jumped in like maybe a round or two earlier and got in the mix where there was a Sean Murphy, Ryan Jeffers, Joey Bart run as my second catcher, right? Especially since I didn't pay up for Tyler Stevenson. Didn't pay up for like, you know, a William Contreras an Adley or a Yiner Diaz, right? I did kind of wait a little bit, so...
Okay,
but I just hope those two guys are healthy all year. Like honestly, that could make a difference if they both get, you know, the 400 to 500 at bats.
Well, we'll keep tabs on it throughout the season as we do, and we could spend the rest of the show breaking down the draft.
Yeah, but we could.
We got to shift over to helping with some draft prep for next year. And Steve, I think this is like a no-brainer for us, obviously, going into like our fifth season. We know that there's, you know, what I think about when I think about pitchers after pick 200 is if it hasn't already, it turns into the all bets are off territory where you can kind of reach a little bit. Now we have kind of split up the agenda for tonight's show based on ADP 200 to 225, which you could kind of look at as the first wave, and then 225, 250. And then after that, we've got like 250 to 300. We'll probably do another episode where we do kind of the deepest shots on pitching sleepers and get, you know, well into like the Jackson Job and the Festa and stuff like that. Although Festa might be going sooner. So when I think about this group, every year there are names that crack like the top 25 starting pitchers, mm-hmm. at least from a performance standpoint. And even just looking at last year, it was a laundry list. Between pick 200 and 300, there are four names that finished in the top 20 on the Razzball Player Rater. Seth Lugo, ADP 255, finished sixth. Paul Skenes, 265, eighth, but we really know that was more like first or second. Jack Flaherty, 287 on that ADP, and he was a SP1. It finished out 12th. And then Sean Manaea, ADP 273, finished out 19th. So between those, it's a little bit, I mean, Skenes is kind of like the prototype, but then you look at Flaherty, Manaea, and Lugo, and that's a little bit different shape to what the typical names are that pop up in the zone where, like, even years back.
A lot of bounce backs, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there are a lot of bounce backs. Like, in the past, I think it was more like a Reed Detmers or somebody that, like, had the scintillating stuff, but, you know, maybe they needed to drop a 12% walk rate or something like that. So it's interesting, but they always pop up every single year. So we had to spend some time with it on this show. You know, other names, Ronaldo Lopez, Luis Gil, Garrett Crochet, those were even deeper ones than pick 200 to 300. But quick thoughts on the rundown here before we jump into the first batch of guys. We got about six or seven names to talk through before the first break.
I think this is, if not the most important part of your draft, one of the most important parts of your draft and having a successful team. You need to have at least one, maybe more, of a pitcher that you take with your last few picks in like a standard 14-team league, 15-team league, or, you know, a pick that you take in round, you know, the pitchers that you take in round 20 to 30 in deeper NFBC drafts. You need to have one or two of those guys,
yes.
to have a shot to win.
Because somebody else is, right?
Yeah. It's like, yeah. And it's essentially free money. Starting pitchers get hurt like crazy in the beginning of the year. Like we see it all the time. And there, it happens every single year. Like there will be a list of 7 to 10 guys that go from ADP 200 to 400 that finish in the top 50 for pitchers. It happens every single year. And if you don't get one of those guys, you're behind the eight ball and you're not going to do well in pitching in your league. I you know, whether you want to take pitching early and invest in that, that's totally fine. Like there's many ways to win. But you need to supplement that with these guys in the back end of your draft. Or, you know, if you do wait on pitching, like these are guys that are going to fortify you and give yourself a chance along with, you know, playing the waiver wire and making trades in leagues where you're able to make trades. I really think that this is probably the most important part of your, like, even more so than like hitting on your first round pick, like getting guys like this win your leagues.
Yeah, and I think regardless, to your point, this is an important section of the draft, regardless of your front end strategy.
Sure.
If you're getting a, you know, two pitchers in the first six rounds, or if your first starting pitcher is coming in the seventh round, this is still a key area to attack, and everybody does. But if you are one that waits until the seventh, eighth round, like, you know, we've done in recent years, I think the advice is you should be doubling and tripling down in this section, because for every Ronaldo Lopez and Jack Flaherty, there's also the AJ Puck, or one that, you know, the industry is all excited about and it just doesn't pan out. So I think that, yeah, that's enough of the kind of the prequel here. I think we jump in with this first section, Steve. ADP 200 to 225. Got to be honest. In recent years, I have been like chomping at the bit to grab a guy in this range. And looking at these, I had to kind of, you know, squint and say, all right, which one is
my
favorite?
I don't feel that way. I don't feel that way. Okay. I like it. Yeah.
So we got Mackenzie Gore, ADP 203, Nathan Eovaldi, 207, Spencer Arrighetti, 218. So pretty different profiles there between Eovaldi and Arrighetti. Yu Darvish at 224 and Bowden Francis at 225. So this just seems like such a motley crew of like Mackenzie Gore kind of has the whole Lucas Giolito thing of like, will it ever happen? And some of the signs are there. Eovaldi and Yu Darvish, I'm going to lump together, Steve, because they remind me of what you were saying, that you might actually shop for high floor in this space, which is much different than what we've done in the past, looking to, you know, go for the Jackson Job type of name. And then you got Arrighetti and Bowden Francis. Kind of interest. I mean, Arrighetti was lights out in August. If you pull up his splits, he was one of the best pitchers in the majors. But then, you know, the whip was always in trouble. The command seemed like it was an issue. But he's a guy that has kind of that pedigree. We were waiting and waiting, and we saw it. And now do we trust it? And then Bowden Francis, while he's kind of newer to the scene, almost has that like George Kirby super light type of thing where it's like the control is really good, the walk rate's low, the whip is low. It's just, will the strikeouts be appealing, and will there be enough volume for it to matter if you're not getting a ton of Ks? Because then it's like, okay, you can get Jose Berrios 30 picks later and you might get another 70 innings of solid ratios. So this is the bunch. And again, I'm scratching my head. I would be fine with, I think, almost any of these guys. You've got a case for them, but I'm not sure it's like past years where I was like, you know, I will be screaming at my laptop if this guy gets sniped before me. But talk to me about your feelings when you see this group.
Yeah, I see a lot that I like here. Shout out Uncle Ted in the chat talking about the potential upside of a guy like Nathan Eovaldi, where, you know, you could see him just being like an SP1 again, like he was 2 years ago, right? For a good portion of the season before he got hurt there towards the end. So I know a lot of these names are boring. It's not like there's Skeens here or even like a, you know, a rookie prospect, like sort of, you know, we have with, you know, like all the Marlins guys that came up. That are hyped up. These are guys that have been around, right, mostly, or even had full seasons last year to mixed results, right? Like we saw Arrighetti's horrific first few starts, And then how amazing he was down the stretch, like you said. Gore is intriguing, like, to me. Like, I think he's the name that jumps off to me on this list just because it seems like he has all the tools. Like you said, it's that Lucas Giolito mold, like, and it's there. Like, when his fastball has the velocity, like, over 96, like Nick Pollock likes to talk about it all the time, you know, it's all there for him. He has the results. It's just a matter of, like, figuring out how to maintain that velocity throughout the year. You know, and his, you know, it's a 25% strikeout rate last year. You were hoping that he would build on that, that 26% from the year before. But he did throw 166 innings, which is, you know, what you like to see. And if there could be a bit of a bump in that strikeout rate, if he's able to maintain that velocity the whole year, I think we could see like a mid to low threes ERA rather than the, you know, high threes ERA, which is a difference, right? That sort of makes him like, okay, yeah, Gore was good for me in the back end of my rotation, to like, yeah, I won my league because Gore had a top 25 starting pitcher season. I think he has the tools in it, like that elite fastball. With you know, a deep arsenal from the left side. I feel like we've been saying this a lot and waiting for it to happen for a while, but I don't mind Gore at all.
Yeah, I mean, Gore, it's funny you mentioned him holding velocity. That's what I was going to say that impressed me about Eovaldi last season, because 2 years ago is where it started really high and everybody thought he was, you know, a whole change pitcher, and then it kind of tapered off throughout the season. But last year, Eovaldi himself, to your point, was really productive, and the K percent came up. He threw the split finger more often. And that splitter actually had the best stuff plus last year. Gore has a great fastball, fifth best stuff plus, but I was just surprised to see it was like a 300 batting average or something against the fastball. So it was like, oh, why is that the case? And you go to his game log and he's just like, he's one that you can kind of get. And I fall into this trap, like you always bring up, Steve, that I'm a game log guy. There are those games with Gore where it's like, all right, 11 strikeouts in one game, 10 strikeouts against the Braves, 10 strikeouts against the Marlins. Like, he puts up these double-digit strikeout outings, and then it's just like enough for you to not even consider dropping him, and you kind of suffer through the inconsistencies a little bit. Granted, that's baked into the draft price here at 203. So I think there's still, if the secondaries can take a step forward or the consistency takes a step forward, it's not hard to see Gore taking the leap that we've seen a lot of pitchers do in the past, you know, whether it's like a Tristan McKenzie or what, you know, whatever. That Giolito is a prime example. But yeah, Eovaldi and Gore are kind of the two priciest of these two. Again, I would be fine with either one. I'm not sure, either one I'm necessarily chasing yet, but they're exciting options. Arrighetti was probably the one last year that I think caught my attention the most with the August that he had. And on top of the fact that he throws five pitches, he's got the 7'2" extension, which is really exciting. And it seemed like that was popping up last year as every single dominant pitcher happened to have that elite extension, and Arrighetti has it. It's just the command has been shaky. Do you feel like Arrighetti is one that you're going to target this year, or given some of the more stable options here that could still pop off are so close by him? Like, where are you at personally with Arrighetti?
I'm a little bit concerned about the walk rate, but other than that, this is like kind of like a profile that I seem to like. You know, high 20s K rate, throws hard enough. The swing strike rate does back up the K rate, which is nice. But I think out of the guys on this list, I think I may have him like fourth or fifth, maybe just in front of Bowden Francis. Again, that may come back to bite me just because he's the youngest arm, and right, like Eovaldi and Darvish have had their injury issues. Gore's had seemingly a tough time putting together two consistent halves together. And we did see, you know, basically an elite run of like, what, 80 to 90 innings for Arrighetti. He did pitch 145 last year, which is, you know, good for easing your concerns with workload or issues or anything like that, yeah, right? He should be good for, you know, if he stays healthy and in the rotation the whole year, no sort of restrictions, right? And he made like 28 starts last year. I'm sure that innings total was low because there were so many games in the earlier season where he couldn't get out of his way and make it through that many innings. So, maybe I'm missing something here by not being more excited. But I could see it, and I know that we've and sort of the feeling about the Astros as an organization has taken some negative turns in the recent years with some of their signings and lack of signings, and, you know, even just a move like trading Kyle Tucker, which is crazy. No matter how many years you have left,
feeling
of
like
control.
A middle tier,
But I still have confidence in what they could do with their starting pitchers. Like, you saw it with Yusei Kikuchi last year. You saw it with Hunter Brown and Arrighetti, guys that, like,
that's right.
In other organizations, don't turn their years around. So they still know what they're doing with pitchers, and
that's,
you know,
what you were saying about
Wesneski,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, it just, there's certain teams that guys go to and they just automatically become interesting. You know, whether that's there's validity to it or not. But for me, Houston is still one of those organizations, despite some of the questionable moves elsewhere.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think from the bunch here, I think I actually lump Arrighetti closer to Gore and Eovaldi than I do with
Darvish and Francis.
And Darvish, I mean, what we saw was good in 81 innings.
Yeah.
But a recurring groin strain, two separate instances, 38 years old. Like,
he did miss some time, like, with personal reasons. I don't know if that ever came out. Like, so he wasn't like full like injury, but, you know, it's still at the point where I don't know if you can bank on Darvish for more than like 120 innings just from where he's at in his career.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe it's a fit in terms of like IL slots, because then you're pairing that with, you know, shopping, which is fun. I mean, everybody gets a little bit of that, you know, endorphin boost when you get mad that someone's on the IL, but then you start shopping for, you know, oh, I'm going to go pick up, you know, this next up and coming prospect and stuff like that. So, interesting. Anything to add on Bowden Francis? I think, it's just unique because if I'm going floor in terms of profile, I probably want a little more volume. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. But I mean, it's interesting that he introduced a new splitter last year, had like a sub 200 batting average against. But the slider that seems like it's all right on some of the metric, like the whiff rates and stuff, just threw it 9% of the time. So maybe that's the path, as he starts with kind of the stable floor and then starts working as well. I mean, it's why we've gotten excited about a guy like George Kirby in the past of like, oh, well, this new slider is going to be a swing and miss pitch. But I don't know. Again, looking at the club as well, like, have we seen that much success with the Blue Jays developing talent as well, right?
I think I'm out on Bowden Francis. Like, this profile looks like Max Fried and Framber Valdez with like a low 20s K rate, a really good walk rate, and like, you know, a good ratios that look good on the surface, right? But there's one thing missing. With Fried and Valdez, there's like a 50 to 60% ground ball rate, sometimes even more in like their really good years. Bowden Francis had a 34% fly ball rate, ground ball rate last year. So that sort of just tells me he's getting lucky on BABIP with fly balls that, you know, didn't really stay in the park. A 1.48 homer per nine isn't great. It's just, you know, he had a 211 BABIP and a, you know, 78% left on base percentage. You know, so I think there may be some regression coming with Bowden Francis, unless there's a way that he ticks up the K rate combined with, you know, having like a 40 to 45% ground ball rate and keeping that walk rate at a good level. I think that a lot needs to go right for him to sort of repeat the success of last year for Bowden Francis.
Yeah, yeah, I think I'd agree. And even looking at the names we'll get to in a second here, if you hadn't shown me this ADP, I think I would have said I was more excited about a handful of those guys. But
yeah,
to your point, 103 innings last year with a 330 ERA, a 0.93 whip. That's what people are excited about. But a lot of the stuff beneath it is
where,
yeah, you're not getting last season stats. So we have more pitchers coming up from ADP 225 to 250, but we got to take our first ad break and we'll be right back after this. Okay, so getting to this next wave, Steve, just to rattle them off here, we got Clark Schmidt at pick 227, Jose Berrios at pick 235, Brandon Woodruff at 241. That one seems like it'll have a lot of movement depending on what he's looking like in spring. Ronel Blanco, 242. He's worth discussion. Gavin Williams, 244. That was one we grabbed in the too early mock draft, so I think we'll probably be on the same page there, but definitely worth talking through. Jeffrey Springs at 247, Carlos Estevez, and Nick Lodolo. Actually, I don't know if, Estevez sneaking in there. We pull him off for relief, but
yeah,
Nick Lodolo at 249. So of this bunch, Steve, you know, we got thoughts on all of them. We don't have time to really deep dive on all of them, but what's kind of jumping out to you in this range and maybe compared to the last group as well?
I'm not as excited about this group as I was the last group, just overall. The name that sticks out to me that I do want to talk about is Gavin Williams. I think that, you know, he's been a guy that, like, I've liked as a prospect, like, you know, when he came up 2 years ago, like heading into this year. This year kind of just seemed like he kept on stumbling out of the blocks over and over, only got to 76 innings, dealt with injuries, dealt with, you know, some poor results. That being said, I am still pretty excited about Gavin Williams, just looking at his swing strike rate in the minors, looking at his K percentages in the minors, you know, the fact that this is the rookie profile or young pitcher profile that I fall in love with, like a really good strikeout rate, a slightly higher than what you want walk rate, but just, you know, elite stuff. And I think that Williams is, in one of those organizations that seems to get the most out of their pitchers and develop them properly and, you know, make them into really quality starting pitchers with much less stuff than Gavin Williams has. Like, that's what's so exciting about having him in the Guardians organization. Like, they do this with guys that, you know, like the Ben Livelys and get useful seasons out of them, right? Like, now they have a guy that has this, you know, elite stuff, at least as far as his underlings go. So I'm excited for him, and I'm in on him again. Maybe it'll come back to bite me like it did last year. But you know, guys with a 60 fastball, 60 slider, and at least average command, overall from a prospect, point of view, are exciting. So I'm in on Gavin Williams. I know Nick sort of hyped up that cutter, which was really good. And we know that we've seen recent pitchers break out with, in addition to their cutter, to their repertoire. So I like it, and I'm in on Gavin Williams again. I love him at this price. Like, this is somewhere where I hope that he stays around here throughout the rest of draft season.
I would love that too. I mean, I think what jumps out most exciting is the fact that he's got that 7'2" extension like we just talked about, but it's on top of like a 97 mile per hour fastball. So like, that reminds me, this long extension with a great fastball and the other stuff that needs to catch up to me feels like Logan Gilbert. And I love, and like you said, the pitching development, you kind of trust in it. Going over to like the stuff plus numbers, his actual best stuff plus pitch last year was the curveball. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where you would love to see that come through a little bit more, because he only throws it 20% of the time. now the cutter and slider is kind of show me pitches, or him starting to lean on a cutter more because he didn't have it before this past season. You do get the sense for a guy who's really at the dawn of like a prospect pedigree that he has, he's still figuring out like what his pitch mix is and how to set up batters and everything. So I do think that his price might stay suppressed, especially in some like home leagues, because traditional numbers don't look that eye popping, like 4.86 ERA, a 1.37 whip, barely over a strikeout per inning. But he does seem like he has the tools to take a big step forward, like you're talking about. And I am there. I am in on that one. That said, I think of this whole mix, is Woodruff the most exciting? Like, just from what we saw in 23, which is the last time we saw him, he was like an ace in all caps. And here he is at 241. So is this more just, I mean, I did see a report that they're iffy on if he'd be ready by opening day. But do you think, I guess, do you have an instinct of how soon in the ADP you would not be interested in Brandon Woodruff? Like, if he comes out and he's kind of getting the volume he should, but he's not lighting the world on fire or getting blown up in spring, where do you think he climbs up to? Like, is he around like the Jack Flaherty zone at like pick 137? I'm just curious because he's such an interesting name amongst guys that are like, oh, could, you know, Jose Berríos is right in front of him, and Woodruff is like a league winner if he gives you 140, 150 innings and is as good as we last saw him. So I'm curious, Penny, for your thoughts on Woodruff.
Brandon Woodruff has not had a K rate less than 29% or a walk rate higher than 7% since 2018.
That's what I'm saying. Like, what do you want, man?
The issue is he's only pitched 150 innings twice, 153 in 2022 and 179 in 2021. But every year that he's pitched, he's been amazing. The bad part or the downside is he's now missed a year and a half straight, and he will be 32 in February.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but if you took the name away, how's he next to like a Shane Baz? Like, you want Baz to do that. You
know, yeah, but Baz just threw, you know, I guess 100 healthy innings at the end of the last season or whatever it was, you know, 80 to 100 innings.
But isn't your philosophy this year, Steve, that we're not predicting health?
Yes, that is fair. But I also think that there's, you know, and we're not predicting health with guys that I know are going to like actually start the year pitching, or, you know, guys that I've seen pitched. I think that may be a little bit of the fine print there for me with that. Like, you know, we're not predicting health in the fact that, you know, I don't see much of a difference between, you know, DeGrom's a bad example, but, you know, two guys going within the top 10, you're not going to be able to tell me which one of those are, you know, between, Paul Skeens and, you know, Zach Wheeler, like, you know, just because Wheeler's been around for so much longer and Skeens is young and hasn't had the innings, like, I'm not going to distinguish that much. Maybe that's not the greatest example. So someone who's been maybe a little bit injured in recent years, but that's my overall point with this. With Woodruff, you know, he's 32, hasn't pitched in a year and a half, may not be ready for opening day. But I understand what you're saying. Like, it goes to my first little diatribe on him there. Like, he's never been bad when he's pitched. I could see it, and I think that, you know, if he's like in spring training and making his regular starts and on track to be, you know, in the first turn of rotation for the Brewers, I don't know if he'll be in his ADP range, right?
No, like, he will not. You know? He will not. If all so, that stuff happens,
maybe it is a good dart to throw. Pierre.
At this range or anything close, because I personally think if he has like a nothing of note but progressing in spring, and by the calendar, he should be ready by opening day. It's just the club has mentioned that, you know, they're not going to push the timeline. They want to make sure he's comfortable, which is what you would say.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he goes up to the SP 60, or this is all pitchers actually on NFBC. So I think ADP wise, he falls somewhere in the zone of like from Spencer Strider at pick 152 to like Shane Baz 167. But I think I would definitely be taking him ahead of like a Brandon Pfaadt, or even a Seth Lugo, who's another, you know, guy who popped off last year. It just is different with Woodruff. Like, that is, you're finding an ace with what might be like a 14th round pick. So, yeah, that will be hard to resist for me. But I wanted to ask and get your thoughts on him. Obviously, it's a little bit of a moot point until we see how all the progress happens. Jeffrey Springs is the other one that I'm excited about. So, again, this is kind of a weird theme for this year, is a lot of the excitement post-pick 200 are not names that you have to go do your research on. They're names that have been extremely viable in fantasy in recent years. But Springs, it's been no secret. I loved what he did in like 2022 and 2023. He looked phenomenal until he had that TJ. And then when he came back last season, it looked pretty dang good for just kind of getting dropped back into the middle of the season. Outstanding changeup. And if you look at like his past, I mean, across those three seasons with a Tommy John surgery in between, his past like 180 innings, you're looking at a guy who's had like a 3 ERA and a whip that's probably like 110 and a strikeout per inning. And to me, he's just like a pitcher's pitcher. He's older at age 32, but he doesn't have a ton of like innings mileage on him. I still think that Springs, and we'll get to Rasmussen as well, which I know was in the chat as well from Uncle Ted, but I see myself leaving a lot of drafts with one of, if not both, of Springs and Rasmussen, knowing that there's risk there, but I'm excited about what they do when they're actually healthy. And again, the club with the Rays is definitely still a plus as it relates to pitching. So not sure. I mean, Ronel Blanco's in here. We haven't talked about him. Nick Lodolo's in here. Not sure if you want to add to any of these guys, Steve, or talk about Springs as well. But those were some thoughts I had when I was looking at this group.
Springs worries me. I did have him in a bunch of places when he came back last year. And despite the results being strong, the fact that he averaged literally 90 flat on the fastball is enough to scare me away until we see otherwise.
What was it back in the day, though?
92 for. I mean, it was 93 back in 2021.
When he was a reliever, yeah.
But the last 2 years, it was 92. So with that, right, like there's not much room for error if you're averaging 92 and don't have the greatest fastball and need to set up that changeup, which is an amazing pitch, right? And he does have the slider too, but a lot of times things start to fall apart at the seams when you lose one or two ticks, when you're living with a below average fastball by velocity. So I know that the K rate looked good. The walk rate was in line. Like, and it looks like this is, you know, the 33 inning sample looked good and gives you some, you know, clearance to go dive back in, but I still see that 90 as a red flag for me, and we'll probably stay away from it because of that, unless I see otherwise with the velocity trending in the right direction.
Part of me wonders too, though, if that's one where the changeup being as effective as it is, like he kind of throws it both the fastball and the changeup arm side and up. And I wonder if, to some extent, that's how he gets away with the lower velo because of the fact that it's like tunneling. I mean, you don't know which one you're getting.
You can get away with 92, right? It's harder to get away with 90 if that's sort of the game that you're playing. And also, you know, the Rays traded him going to the Athletics. We can't say Oakland anymore, right? It's now just you go by the Athletics. They're abbreviated now like ATH when you use them, right? They're playing in that park in Sacramento, which I think may play as like a hitter's park. At least that's the early sort of takeaway, right? It's like
I did not even see this. This is a week young here that he got traded to the Athletics. Oh, boy.
Yeah. So no, yeah.
Well,
so
that gives always a little bit of pause too. It's like, why did they move on from
exactly whenever the Rays trade away a guy? I know the Athletics are trying to, you know, make more of a splash with trading for Spring, signing Severino. They had their name, I think, in the Max Fried sweepstakes, which is pretty interesting. So good for them for actually trying to do something here and invest around what is a surprisingly good lineup. I'm just, you know, the fact that the velocity was low and he's going to now pitch in a Triple A ballpark is enough for me to sort of stay away from Springs for now.
All right. This will be one for us then because, I will have some shares. I feel like he's such a – he also has, I mean, which not to get off the field much, but he has a chip on his shoulder all the time. It's kind of like that Tommy Pham mentality. He'll probably have a lot to prove. And I could see him kind of doing the whole bet on myself thing as well. So we'll see. Ronel Blanco, pending for your thoughts, because how often do you see a guy at ADP 242 – that just had a 2.80 ERA and a 1.09 WHIP throughout 167 innings. Like, it is crazy. His changeup is the sixth best by Stuff Plus. Yes, there is definitely regression here, but it goes back to that old, like, has the hate gone too far if he's really at 2.42? Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on Blanco?
That when you see a 2.82 ERA going at pick 2.40, that makes me believe, that makes me, you know, the industry is saying we do not believe in you.
Yes, right.
And I don't think I believe in Ronel Blanco. I hope that doesn't sound too harsh, but it seems like it's smoke and mirrors here with me. Like, you know, another low ground ball rate, an extremely high left on base rate, low BABIP. You know, the swing and miss stuff is good. Like, a 13% swing strike rate is really good, and the 25% strikeout rate is, you know, good. But there's also a 10% walk rate. Like, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of that, like, remember the no hitter in the first part of the year, and then he like throw like another like four or five no hit innings the next start or something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
So, like, you know, it seems like I think I would believe that he is more of the pitcher that he was in the second half, even with a 3.2 ERA. I was thinking it was more like a high threes. Like, that's what I would expect from Blanco. Like, someone that's usable in fantasy, but not like, I don't think has much upside or you know, anywhere close to a 2.80 ERA. I would project him for like a 4 ERA, like his ERA indicators signified last year with the 4.17 Sierra, 4.09 XFIP, 3.97 XERA.
The only thing I'll say about Blanco, because again, you go back to the Astros and the confidence we have in him, and Blanco himself is kind of like this mystery box. You know what I mean? Like, he does not have a traditional, like, it's not like we have five seasons of data on him. You know what I mean? So the only thing I would say is that if the price stays this low, the nice part about drafting him, because we only saw him succeed last year, is if he gives you two starts where he's not doing anything like last year, you just cut bait and move on.
Yeah, that's a great point, yeah.
And I do think that, I know Nick always brings that up, but I do think that is a big one compared to, I mean, a prime example is, like, I was just talking about Jeffrey Springs. If I took Springs over,
or
Blanco,
even like Nick Lodolo, like, it's like, you know, this guy has such good upside.
Yeah. And picks him up. Yeah. Blanco's putting out some stinkers. You just move on. So, okay. Well, that's 225 to 250. We got the final 50 picks of 200 to 300. We'll get to, but we're going to take our next ad break. We'll be right back after this. So, Steve, just kind of picking up where we left off on Drew Rasmussen. Now, Rasmussen is still a Ray, correct? Did I fall asleep on him?
Yes, he is still a Ray.
He's
for
still
now.
A Ray.
The Rays could literally move anyone at any moment. So for now,
well, and Rasmussen is also still 29, despite being a name that's been around for a while. And he has the fastball ball velocity that Springs did not have with 97. We saw him, I think it was more in like a relief setting last year that they were doing like some setup everything. But what we saw looked really good with a 2.83 ERA, a 1.08 WHIP in just under 30 innings. So again, very small. 2023 was injury riddled as well. I believe he do I have it right on Rasmussen? Yeah. So he declined a third Tommy John surgery and instead just did kind of a complicated like 3-in-1 procedure on his elbow. That gives me some.
The Rays have a type. Like they have that. They have my theory down. Like who cares about the injury? Just give us the talent.
They'll
take guys with however many Tommy John surgeries they want, you know?
Right, right. But, I mean, Rasmussen's stuff is hard to resist. Mm-hmm. Like, when you just look at the fact that he's, like, the four-seam sinker cutter is such a – they're all so similar, but he just is so effective with them and always has. It's like anytime I think of, like, four-seam sinker cutter, like, all kind of cousins of the fastball, that effective, it reminds me of, like, prime Lance Lynn. Like good Lance Lynn. And I feel like Rasmussen, if you get 130 innings, he could dominate. And then you look at this ADP, again here beyond pick 250, Rasmussen in the month of, December has been going at pick 255 with a min pick at 219. This is another one that's exciting. The names before him, Nick Lodolo, Jeffrey Springs. Names after him, Walker Buehler, Ranger Suarez. Steve, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like Drew Rasmussen. I had him in 2023 for those 40 glorious 44 innings where it looked like I had an ace in this territory in this draft range, right, before he got hurt. Like, he was throwing harder, 96, was actually improved the strikeout rate, which in 2022, which led us to, you know, him being a later round pick. The fact that he only had a 21% strikeout rate with that good walk rate at 5.3%, but looked like he was on his way to break out, got hurt, came back, looked amazing out of relief last year, was throwing even harder, which, I would expect some regression there if he does transition back to the starter. But hey, this is still a dart that I want to throw. Like, all the stuff looks really, really good. It's all red on the sliders on Fangraphs for Stuff Plus. Like, I'm into Drew Rasmussen and would love to throw a dart in this range. And again, like, you know, he could either be hurt or maybe a reliever. Would still be a really good reliever, I think. Like, actually one for useful in fantasy, the few that may not even need saves to be useful. That's how good his stuff was out of the bullpen. So I like Rasmussen a lot and definitely will have a lot of shares next year.
Yeah. Great break on the cutter. And it's interesting that like 2022 season, when we last saw volume, is the season where we didn't see the K per nine.
Yeah. It was just a 21% strikeout rate, but a really low walk rate. Like,
so what
still threw pretty hard.
What changed?
Know?
So he actually ditched the sweeper during that time in favor of ramping up the sinker.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just, that's interesting to me because, like, the sinker always feels like a sacrificial lamb pitch. You know what I mean? Like, the results are never exciting, but then you see what it unlocks, where it's like, oh well, his swing and miss on his four seamer skyrocketed once he introduced the sinker.
Yeah,
like, stuff
you
like
know,
that.
Sarah. So the Athletic talks about a bunch, like having another hard pitch that does something else to throw people off your fastball. Like, even though that may not be a swing and miss pitch, it may unlock other swing and miss pitches, which is
exciting. So Rasmussen's a good one. From the rest of this bunch, I think you got Walker Buehler, who, as we're recording, is not yet a Chicago Cub, but there are some strong rumors on that one. Ranger Suarez, Cutter Crawford, Michael Wacha had an interesting year, Reese Olson. And then, I mean, once you go beyond pick 300, there's a handful of names as well.
Well, which I think could be another show. Like, there's a lot of guys show. I know that a lot of people have been throwing out in the comments, which is, you know, another show. Maybe we'll pick a few of our favorite guys post pick 300 as another show topic for there. With I know Uncle Ted was throwing out DJ Hers there, which I love me some DJ Hers. But Reese Olson is interesting. Walker Buehler, I mean, looked great in the last few starts in the World Series, right? And is a guy that, you know, is, as Uncle Ted said in the chat, kind of could be that Jack Flaherty mold, like a guy that people have given up on, but, you know, could still be reminded that they have great stuff and there's a great pitcher in there. I could really see that happening with Walker Buehler, especially in a good pitcher's ballpark like Wrigley Field can be at times.
I believe Nick's stance on Buehler, too, is also that it was kind of, I don't want to put words in his mouth here, so disclaimer, I'm going off memory here, but I think he was saying that the peak of Buehler was also kind of sticky stuff.
That's a big thing. Like, you know, he's been hurt basically since then, or like not as good, since sticky stuff was really enforced. And there's some other, you know, soft analysis stuff that, Nick was tweeting out about, you know, he got a tip that, Buehler basically coming back from injury was sort of stubborn and didn't really listen to the Dodgers. And then finally in the playoffs, like got on track and got on a plan to actually be able to pitch and get on a regimen to get healthy and get into games, which, you know, is, I don't want to speculate too much, not knowing the full both sides of the story with that. Right. But, you know, obviously the Dodgers are an amazing organization, and if I were in that organization, I would listen to whatever they had to say. But that's easier said from done from, you know, me with the microphone on the podcast, right? But, you know, you never know what goes on to that. And, like, right, it was much longer, right? This was basically a two-year Tommy John recovery for Walker Buehler, which is kind of unheard of, right? Like, he basically didn't come back. Like, Buehler could have potentially started the season healthy last year. That was at least this time last year what the assumption would be, right? Like, it was kind of like the Brandon Woodruff thing. Like, you know, he should be going. Like, they may be a little bit conservative, but he should be going to start the season. And then Buehler didn't come back to what, like, September, October last year. So, definitely was longer than or he got started, got hurt, right, went back down, like, didn't look good. So, you know, who knows with that, but...
Yeah, it's a
long,
risk,
long, yeah, a long, long, long-winded way of saying I am interested in what Walker Buehler could be.
Yeah, if this price remains. I think if he skyrockets the way that Woodruff, we were just kind of, you know, theorizing if Woodruff goes up to pick 170, I think I might be out. But he's got 80 picks before I would for sure be out on that. It's just, I think I'm surprised looking back, like, yeah, Buehler is now 30 years old. He's really had three great seasons in the majors, but those three great seasons were 2018, 2019, 2021. Everything around that has kind of been peppered with like low volume for one reason or another or questionable performance. And then to Nick's point, you have to look at like the era as well and if he's adjusted since they've changed stuff like that. So I just want to make sure I'm not treating this the same as I would a Brandon Woodruff, who, to your point, Steve, it was like he's never had less than a 29% K rate for nine seasons in a row. So, yeah, just in my mind, they're both similar in terms of the playbook of how I'm going to treat him. But Woodruff is a solid, you know, he's the SP1 possible to me until I see something from Buehler. If it all clicks for me, I think it's more like, you know, he'll help your staff, but he's not going to be like a superstar.
Yeah, Buehler's had 140 basically unusable innings since 2021.
And the name brand is like, I think people, especially with the World Series, you know what I mean? Like when
like a 4.02 ERA in 65 innings with a 21% strikeout rate, and then in 75 innings last year, a 5.38 ERA with 18.6% strikeout rate. Like you can't even start that last year. Like that's how bad it was during the regular season. So definitely some concern, but you know, we also got pretty close to that with Jack Flaherty over the last 2 years, right? Like that's sort of, I know a little bit of a recency bias.
Flaherty took 3 years off.
Yeah.
Like
Buehler. So guys do come back, like, right? Like Justin Verlander had some pretty bad years, right? Maybe not to this extent, but like guys have bad years. Yeah, Flaherty was last good before last year in 78 innings in 2021. Like another guy that was unusable for two straight years prior to that. And even more of a sample, right? It was like 170 innings compared to the 140 for Buehler. But
on their best day, is Buehler Flaherty? Because I know that came up in the comp. Like, Flaherty dominated in a way that we hadn't seen.
I mean, I think so. Like Buehler was a Cy Young contender from like, you know, 2019.
I guess I just don't like him to have the same strikeout stuff. Like,
I mean, he had a 29% strikeout rate in 2019, with a 3.26 ERA. You know, that's for a 10.6 K per nine in 2020. I know shortened season, but 36 innings of a 10.3 K per nine. 2021, he had 207 innings. The strikeout rate took a little bit of a hit.
Maybe that's
with 26%. But I mean, the volume for that, right? Like the 207 innings in 2021 had to be close to the top of the league with a 26% strikeout rate. That's amazing volume and a 2.47 ERA. Like, he definitely finished.
But yeah, Flaherty's 18-19 run.
Sure.
Was 300 innings, pretty much, or 350 innings of 30% K rate. I mean, you're probably splitting hairs.
Yeah.
Here. Buehler
finished fourth in Cy Young voting in 2021. Has Jack Flaherty had a Cy Young finish that high?
Oh, that's not a fantasy category.
Sure.
Steve.
Sure. Yeah.
He's on the Cardinals. We're not as good as the Dodgers.
I feel like your Cardinals colors are showing a little bit here, though. You know,
no, absolutely not. There is not 350 innings of Buehler's career that is better than the 18-19 of Flaherty, other than the team context.
I feel like his 2019 to 2021 was better, and that's like 400 innings of, you know, of a 3.2 ERA with, you know, basically a strikeout an inning.
The strikeout in the inning, though, like that's,
yeah, it's definitely less on the K upside, more on the volume though, which is part of the game we play. You know,
yeah, that's something. That's something. Well, to be fair,
I like it though. I like
Flaherty
it.
Flaherty just did it. So
yes,
I think we have to give Buehler the chance.
Sure, and maybe with that to sort of lean back and you kind of could bet on Flaherty's stuff, right? Because of that run, and there wasn't the question with the sticky stuff with Buehler as there is with Buehler. So maybe that's what you could bet. You know, Flaherty always had the amazing
slider,
and knuckle curve, whereas Buehler sort of, you know, I don't know if there's a, like, he more was like a pitcher, right?
Right.
And was able to, you know, finesse his way. Not that his stuff wasn't good, but
The swing and miss.
Yeah,
stuff
the swing and miss stuff was
dominant from Flaherty.
Was more dominant for Flaherty. That's for sure. Like, Buehler's best swing strike season was 12.3% in 2020. So if you want to throw that out, it was 12.1% in 2019. Flaherty, as far as swing strike goes, so just the amount of strikes, like, he had a 14.3% in 2020, 13.7% in 2019, and got it back up to 13.3% this year. So, like, he got back to that level. Like, if Buehler gets back to a 12% swing strike rate, like,
for sure,
maybe that's a 25% strikeout rate. Flaherty had a 30% strikeout rate this year. Like, I don't know if Buehler has it in him. That's a good point. Yeah.
Honestly, it's a good discussion. That there's a lot of similarities there. So
yeah.
Okay, so rounding out here, any other guys other than Rasmussen, Buehler? We got Ranger Suarez, Cutter Crawford, Michael Walkout. Like,
I
agree with you. Reese Olson's interesting, but anything with Crawford, I know Nick's out, and Walkout, it's kind of like, we, you know, he's one.
I don't know. I let you talk me into these type of guys. Like I don't know. I don't know. I don't see it with many of them. Maybe besides Reese Olson. But even with that, that's seemingly like more of a long shot for me. Especially with, you know, a decline in overall stuff and swing and miss stuff for Reese Olson this year, and dealt with the injuries too.
So, I'm not really chasing. Yeah. I mean, Crawford to me is the different one. Like Suarez and Waka, I kind of agree with where Nick's at, that it's like it's kind of the Vargas rule that Suarez will have runs where he looks good for 4 or 5 games.
Like command pitchers, like there's starts where it's going and you just need to ride it and like this is good. Like that's what he'll say in like his roundups. Like it's working for Suarez. Like he has his command, he has all of his pitches, he has a feel for all of his pitches. Ride it. Mm-hmm. But then there's going to be moments where that's off, and like, you know, guys like Suarez can pitch like top 2 to 3 fantasy starters for stretches when they're feeling it.
Right. And I think what makes Cutter Crawford a little bit different than those guys is that Stuff Plus likes him. But is that just enough? Kind of tricking the model, because we've been saying that for 3 or 4 years, it seems like. And while there's some pockets of like it looking promising, you know, if you go back last year, it was like, oh well, 8 strikeouts, 1 run in the Met against the Mets, and all, like he'll put it together for small windows, but the run prevention is so bad that it's just like, can you handle a +4 ERA, and you know, look at all of that when you're still not getting a strikeout per inning. And to me, this is where I'd rather just take the deep shots on like the Jackson Jobs of the world. So, or the DJ Hurts, like we were talking about. So I'm not going to battle on any of those, but I think those, summing up the show, I think the, Bueller, Rasmussen, for me, Springs, we both agree, Gavin Williams. Blanco, I might have like 1 or 2 shares if it all stays right at like 250. Woodruff, I'm going to be on the bus all the way up to the Shane Boz, Spencer Strider tier as long as he's trending in spring. And then in that top tier, like we said, I think whatever comes to me between Gore, Eovaldi, and Arrighetti, I'm interested in.
I think that they're all good pitchers, those guys, or the three of those guys are good pitchers with some degrees of upside, that's for sure. And I think you're right on Woodruff. Like that's a good call. Like there's a good pitcher there. Yeah. But I mean, like we said at the top of the show, like this is an important.
Oh, this is area, it, dude. This is like the draft, our rotations. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that. Once we do this show and the next show, when we look at deeper guys, this will probably be. Anything from SP, you know, SP 5-6 to the back end of the rotation. And I love what you said at the top of the show, Steve, that if you don't hit on one of these,
you're behind the 8-ball.
You're behind the 8-ball. Yes.
And then you
Uncle
need to
Ted,
hit on
appreciate,
the
appreciate. Yeah. We got to shout Uncle Ted's comments this whole time, but he summed it up nicely as well. These are league winning rounds.
Yes.
And that is the fact of the matter, that like, if you don't get any of these, the manager who does is likely going to win their league. So,
it's super important. Yeah, okay, totally agree.
Any closing thoughts, Steve? It's been good catching up. You got any big Christmas plans or anything?
I guess this is a little bit of time traveling. If you're listening to the podcast, right? This is we're recording this before Christmas, so no, nothing too big. Heading up both sides of the family, so we'll be just traveling basically Central Jersey, then back up to North Jersey where I am now. So nice. Nothing too big, which is exciting. It's I don't have to do like a 4-hour drive that some people have to do, or even longer. I know that you guys are used to in the Midwest, right?
My brother-in-law.
It would say like holidays are, it's standard that it comes with like a 4 or 5 hour drive just to get from city to city. So what about you?
We're hosting my mom's side, but it's nowhere near as daunting as my dad's side that we did Thanksgiving. It's like 40 people.
Got it.
Of a circus, but mom's side is much more chill, like kind of 10 people. We just do some pizzas.
Nice.
And yeah, otherwise get a couple friends in town, so all good stuff. And then right after Christmas, I'm going to be joining the fold, Steve, and
nice.
getting my first draft.
Love it.
Yeah, I still got to sign up for the league. Well, I had the NYC trip, and then we're visiting my buddy down in Austin, Texas in January. So I was like, hey, some of my loose change, my beer money for drafts is like going toward flights and
all that stuff.
So I was like, all right, let me just get through the holidays here, and then we'll get into it. Yeah. So
love it.
Oh, man. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining. Thank you for listening, as always. Hope you guys all have a very, very happy holiday season. Enjoy the final rest of the winter before we ramp up drafts. And, for everybody on the stream as well, Uncle Ted, appreciate it. We will clock your note here as well and hit on it next show as well. But our time is up here for episode 164 of Wins Above Fantasy. Thank you guys for talking baseball with us.
Thanks for listening, guys. Happy holidays.